This is Writer's Cast, a podcast about books and authors. I'm your host, David Wilk. Today, I'm talking to Amy Strauss about her book called The Suburban Microfarm, Modern Solutions for Busy People. And I have to say, it's an absolutely beautiful book, and I really like it. I'm a sort of terrible amateur gardener, so a book like this is pretty inspiring. Maybe, Amy, you could talk a little bit about your background in gardening or farming or whatever it is that you've done that kind of led you to writing this book.
Yeah, sure. Well, you know, thanks for having me on the show, David. It's nice to talk to you. I always love talking to fellow gardeners. And, you know, I think most of us are more than novice gardeners. We just don't give ourselves enough credit. But, you know, my gardening journey started a little over 10 years ago now, when I decided to leave my career as a high school teacher. I was just kind of looking to do something different. I kind of looked at my life ahead, my trajectory ahead, and I thought, you know, I'm just kind of ready for a change. And I didn't know what that next thing was going to be, but I found myself kind of gravitating towards this idea of having my hands in the dirt. And if you are a fellow gardener, you kind of, you know what I mean. I kind of called this period of time my dirt therapy. And it was during this time that I got a few different part-time jobs to kind of, you know, do something while I figured out what I would do next with my life. And so I found my job, I found one part-time job as a landscape gardener. I was working on a team of ladies who helped, you know, create, you know, interesting landscapes for people. These were edible landscapes. These were pollinator-friendly landscapes, you know, herb-focused landscapes, all kinds of interesting things. And I learned a lot about planting and design at that job. And then I went on to work at a local organic farm. And they serve 100 families locally with organic produce on a weekly basis. It's called a CSA program, or also called Community Supported Agriculture. And it was during this time that I realized, you know, how much goes into the coordination of the planting and the timing of it all and the harvesting to feed, you know, 100 families. It was just really incredible for me to be a part of that. And so at that time, I started experimenting in my own backyard and, as it turns out, my own front yard. And I also went on to get a certification in something called permaculture, which is it's sort of a design science that we use in food production types of scenarios, and it's a design science that helps us solve problems in the landscape by working with nature. And for me, that was really fascinating. It was sort of combining my love of, you know, producing food for myself, for my family, you know, for my household, and also, you know, nurturing my local environment. So, you know, getting to sort of combine those two loves was really powerful for me. So I started writing about all of this stuff. I started a website, 10thacrefarm.com, and I named it that because my little house in the suburbs was on 1/10 of an acre. And so I just started, you know, writing little, you know, blog posts and articles about the types of things that I was learning in my yard about producing food efficiently or producing it in an ecologically friendly way. And, you know, over the years, more and more people started reading these things that, you know, I was just kind of producing out of a love for what I was doing. But eventually, one of my readers, you know, years ago said, you know, you really ought to write a book on this stuff because it's so interesting, you know, these types of things that you're talking about that are sort of combining this concept of farming and using it in these, you know, suburban, you know, micro-sized spaces. And so I thought about it, and then I did. That's kind of the, you know, the basis of, you know, where the book, The Suburban Microfarm, came from.
Well, I really liked it. It's kind of a modern approach. I really like the style that you've taken up and the kind of helpful approach to people who might be fearful or worried about how difficult it is. And I think you make it, I think by breaking it down into steps and making it simple, I think that's really helpful. Are you familiar with the Helen and Scott Nearing books? I assume you are.
Yes.
Because I think there have been, you know, there's this sort of, we have times in our history where people feel this urge to get their hands dirty, get into the dirt, get back to the land in a certain way. And I think sometimes that actually is harder to do than what you've set out to do, which is in a lot of ways more practical, because we don't have to give up our suburban lives and move to the country. What you're proposing basically is do it with the dirt you have.
Yeah, that's right. You know, I think a lot of people have, you know, really felt this urge, you know, this sort of back to the land movement, really felt this urge to get out of the city and get into wide open spaces. And some people have been able to make that work. But, you know, over the years, we've kind of seen a lot of people who weren't able to make that work. They kind of felt, you know, isolated and, you know, lonely, and they realized how much work goes into producing all of the things a human needs, you know, to live a life on a daily basis. And so what I kind of wanted to do was, you know, bring this idea of getting our hands in the dirt, you know, having some participation in, you know, in providing for our daily needs. And for me, that love is, you know, is growing food for my family. And, you know, other people might do it in other ways. You know, some people are really, you know, interested in, you know, fiber arts, you know, making clothes or that sort of thing. That was never something that's too much sitting still. I like to be moving and having my, you know, body moving. And so food production was always something I was really, you know, it was a love for me, and it was a way for me to feel like I'm contributing to my daily needs. I'm actively a part of that process, but it doesn't have to take over my whole life. I can sort of fit this into, you know, my modern reality, which is, you know, jobs and working and taking care of a house and all the things that, you know, and a family and all those things that we do in our daily lives that perhaps, you know, weren't around back then. And, you know, you might even add in all of that time we spend on our computers nowadays and our phones and technology. And that's not something we had to do back then.
No, although I think the substitute then was people would read books, you know, books and magazines, and, you know, there were journals and newsletters and all those, you know, written forms that are or print forms that are now done online. I think if you were gardening seriously or farming, you know, you spent a lot of time with catalogs and a lot of time, you know, sending off for seeds and things like that, you know, that nowadays people can do so easily. Just online, as long as you got the internet. But maybe you could talk a little bit. I think one of the things that I liked about what you suggested is, or you know, that you lay out for people is that they can do this in, you know, you can scale to the amount of space and the amount of time that you have. But I thought that it was one of the things that you pointed out that's really important is to put some time into it every single day. That you can't just plant some stuff and then walk away from it and expect it to thrive and produce vegetables, you know, 60, 90, whatever number of days it is afterwards. But maybe you could talk a little bit about, you know, the kind of the pleasure of that daily practice, almost like a discipline that you preach.
Yeah, that's right. You know, I love this idea of a daily practice. And for me, it's almost like a ritual because, you know, doing this gardening as a practice, it's sort of bringing in actual life into our lives, you know. And what I mean by that is, you know, actual, you know, participation in meeting some of our own needs. And, you know, I do think that there's this ritual aspect to it that can be very rewarding, and it can be very meditative as well. And, you know, for me, you know, especially when you're just starting gardening, I think that there's so many things that we can not notice if we're just checking on our gardens, you know, once a week or so. We can miss that moment, you know, that first day when the seed sprouts, or that first day when the tomatoes start flowering, or, you know, that first day when you see that, you know, first berry turn ripe. And, you know, we can also miss those moments when, you know, that first moment when, shall we say, you know, a pest shows up.
Well, I was going to mention that, because as you talk about the first day of flowering, or the first day when that cucumber just begins to fruit, my mind goes instantly to the woodchuck that shows up at just that moment. Or the you know, or the bug that eats your tomato plant just in time for you not to get any.
Yeah, that's right. And so I feel like, you know, when we especially when we're first starting out, and I hope even after that, I think this idea of, so I called it the 15 minutes a day in the garden. And it's not to imply that, you know, perhaps your garden only needs 15 minutes a day, although if you only have 15 minutes a day, I think that there's a way to properly size your garden so that it's manageable in that amount of space or that amount of time. But, you know, we're checking on our garden every day, you know, 15 minutes. We're kind of noticing what's new, what's different, what's changing. We get to see, you know, how the sun changes in the sky as we go through the season. We get to see how those seasons change, and likewise how our plants change. And but yes, and of course, you know, if you see that first day when the caterpillar pest, you know, shows up, you can start taking action right away because you found it right away. You know, it hadn't been chewing on your plants all week, and then suddenly, you know, you discover it, and now it's, you know, now there are more caterpillars. And and so I feel like there's this daily ritual to it, and it allows you to experience your garden, you know, through the seasons, through the changing weather. And I think that there's something really grounding about that.
And so you're located in Ohio, near Cincinnati. Is that sort of, do you think that's kind of the a kind of average, a temperate growing climate? I mean, obviously, if you're in California, it's completely different. But for so much of America, you know, I know we're divided up into areas depending on the growing season, but there does seem to be a sort of average. If you, and maybe Ohio is kind of in the middle of that. Do you think that's right?
Yeah, you know, I do think that as far as the and you're speaking about the USDA, you know, hardiness growing zones, and I'm in growing zone 6, and that does seem to be pretty average. I've, you know, talked to professional gardeners and farmers, and, you know, amateur gardeners and farmers all over the country, and I wanted to try to make my book as, you know, universally helpful as I possibly could. And so, you know, whenever I found something that might not be appropriate for everybody, I tried to, you know, add in a caveat. One of the things that I can think of is that, you know, for most people in the United States, we do a lot of our planting around frost dates.
Yes.
You know, when is our last frost date in the spring? And one is our first frost date in the fall. But, you know, there are areas of the country that don't usually get frost at all. And so, you know, I tried to incorporate things that helped everybody move forward, you know, even if, you know, they were experiencing differences from me. But of course, you know, the majority of the book is going to be, was written from my personal experience. So it is nice that I guess I'm in the average zone.
Right. No, I thought of that because, you know, I'm not very familiar with what it's like to grow anything in California or Oregon or, you know, the temperate Northwest, things like that. Obviously, they have benefits and challenges of their own. Although I like that idea of the three seasons of being able to plant, you know, all year round, plant and grow. That would be pretty fun.
That would be pretty neat. I would like to try that at some point in my life.
Well, with climate change doing what it's doing, Ohio may, in fact, end up looking more like Mississippi pretty soon. So you might end up with a three-season climate before too long. Not that that would be ideal to happen in that way. But
that's right.
But thinking about...
Hard to know what's ahead, isn't it?
Well, unfortunately, yes. Or maybe fortunately, it's better not to think about it. But let me ask you, one thing that I think is hard for a lot of people, I'm just sort of projecting to potentially the audience that will be interested in your book. I think a lot of people want a garden and they kind of look for ways of making it possible to start small. And you talk a little bit about, you know, growing in pots and even growing on a porch if you only have a deck or a porch, or if you live in an urban area, you may not even have a backyard. That was one thing I thought was really useful in the book. I want you to talk about what happens when you plant in what was formerly a lawn, especially in the front, because I think for a lot of people in the suburbs, they really worry about what are their neighbors going to think. You know, how will they deal with that? And you talked quite a bit about that in the book. I thought that was pretty interesting. So maybe you could start with the easy part, which is, you know, planting in really micro spaces and making use of opportunities that don't require you to go further, even on your tenth of an acre or eighth of an acre. But then you could talk a little bit about, you know, the more radical approach that involves planting all kinds of ground that was formerly lawn space.
Yeah, that's right. You know, I think you're right. I think one of the barriers to this idea, you know, it sounds really great, but, you know, who has the time for that? And so, you know, when we are just starting out, and maybe for a good portion of the time we spend gardening, maybe our goal isn't to start small and scale up. Maybe we just want to have a little teeny area that we can, you know, get our hands in the dirt with and kind of tinker with plants. And, you know, that's, you know, good for us. In that regard, we, on my new property here, we've got some construction happening, renovation projects and outdoor heavy machinery is going to be around the house. And so at the moment I have a little plot down the street at my community garden, which is my space to garden for the year. So I think a lot more areas are having, you know, have community gardens, and it's a great place to start because you can go there and you can experiment and figure out, you know, what kinds of plants you enjoy growing, experiment with different combinations of plants. And when you find something you like, you can bring that back to your house and use that, you know, in your landscape. But, and so that's one way you could, you know, start using microspaces. You could, you know, figure out what works. I started in a little microspace in my backyard that wasn't visible for a lot of people except for me. And so I knew that, you know, if I didn't like it, or if, you know, it kind of got wild, or if the combination of plants just really didn't work well. I knew that nobody else was going to see it, but me. And we can sort of, another strategy for that is just kind of sneaking plants here and there into the landscape. By and large, if we're just sneaking in a plant or two into a regular landscape, by and large, people aren't really going to notice that. And so I know for many of us, it's the aesthetics of this whole thing that kind of creates a barrier. And that was a barrier for me because a good portion of my, original yard was visible by my neighbors. And I wanted to make sure that I was, being a good neighbor, doing stuff that was, aesthetically pleasing and not sort of creating an eyesore for the neighbors. And, after a little bit of experimenting, trying little plants here and there, I was kind of sneaking herbs into my regular landscape, or I would sneak in a little cherry tomato plant here and there, or a pepper plant or a basil plant. After a while I said, I think I'm ready to create a landscape that is more edible. And so I did a lot of studying, and I thought, the one thing I can do is I can replace some of these ornamental bushes in my front yard with berry bushes. They're almost just as an ornamental. And in fact, many of them are commonly used as landscape plants. And so I planted a row of currant bushes in front of my front porch. And I planted some black raspberries underneath the front windows. And that was kind of my start to all of this. I also planted some dwarf cherry trees out by the street, kind of in between the sidewalk and the street. I call that area the parking strip. I think it has other names in other areas of the country. But, that was, for me, starting with some perennials, those fruit plants that come back every year and can substitute for, regular trees and bushes, was an important first step. And, they were highly productive. I think my front yard, just if I count those three, the currants and the black raspberries and the cherries, I think I was over 50 pounds of fruit just in my little teeny front yard. We can produce a lot in a little bit of space without making a giant statement and without producing a ton of extra work for ourselves.
No, I think that's actually a really great idea. I hadn't focused on that, but I think the idea of the berry bushes and the fruit trees, because people are used to you having bushes and trees in your yard, they are not problematical. It's not like you have to, dig up your entire lawn to do that. I think that's actually great advice for people.
Yeah, that's right. And I think it all comes down to, picking ones that are appropriate for, your climate. And another one that's really easy to grow are strawberries. They make a nice, border, because they're really strawberry plants. If you've never grown them before, are, small plants. They only grow maybe like 6 inches tall or something. They're super tiny. So they look really nice along a border of a sidewalk or something.
Oh, that's a great...
But very productive. Yeah,
I really like that. I think that's not only smart, but it's easy for people to do.
Yeah, very easy. And, when we were doing this, I know when my husband and I started on this journey, the first step of all of this was, kind of removing the existing landscape. And, to be fair, this was, landscaping that we weren't all that crazy about. It was, it was left over from the previous owners, and it's not quite how we would have planted the front yard anyway, the front yard landscape. So it was for me, it was kind of easy to take out those existing trees and bushes and then, you know, replace them with, you know, other stuff that I found more aesthetically pleasing, especially when you throw in a bunch of flowers and stuff. And but there was that moment when all of this was happening and the neighbors are coming over and saying, "What's going on over here? You know, what are you doing?" And, you know, this was about 10 years ago. So my husband and I were the young couple on the street. And I think a few people were wondering, you know, what's this young couple doing? And is it going to affect, you know, property value? And, but I always had my neighbors in mind when I was doing this, you know, what would be, even if these weren't fruit bearing plants, would they look nice in a landscape? And if the answer was yes, then I, you know, went ahead and used it. So there were a lot of herb plants that made into my front yard landscape as well, because they're very beautiful when they're flowering. But then also, you know, you can just walk out the front door and clip some of your favorite herbs to add to a meal while cooking dinner.
So do you think that as you've done this, do you feel like there's more acceptance? And I don't mean just for you personally, but in general, for instance, it just feels like more people are more aware. You know, you talked about CSAs earlier. CSAs have grown tremendously in the last 10 years. And so all over the country, you know, people are more aware of the notion of a community involvement in gardening and farming. You know, you have more community gardens like you were talking about in your neighborhood. And it just seems like there would be a greater acceptance potentially now than there might have been a few years ago. And you also, you talked about how you can involve your neighbors. And I thought that was really also a really good contribution, you know, that it's not just, I'm going to have a garden and I'm going to tell you about it and convince you that it's a good thing. You really talk about the practicalities of human relations with your neighbors as a way of engaging them in what you're doing.
Yeah, you know, it's so fun. I do think, you know, your first part of that comment about it being, you know, more accepting in recent years, I definitely think that's true. I definitely think since I kind of started down this path, you know, more and more people are open to, you know, food production, you know, happening in our backyards. I see more and more people with backyard gardens. You know, you can even see more and more people with, you know, keeping chickens in their suburban spaces or urban, you know, backyards. And yeah, you know, now the suburb that I live in currently, there are two very large community gardens nearby. And, you know, that was something that, you know, 15, 20, 25 years ago, you would only see community gardens in urban areas. And so now I think it's just very interesting to see that, you know, we've got these community garden programs out in the suburbs and people are participating in it. And so I do think that there is a wider acceptance. I think people are starting to have, or perhaps they're becoming more aware of, you know, where their food is coming from, how it was produced, and, you know, wanting to support practices that, you know, are more ecologically friendly or more, you know, health leaning. And so now we're, you know, supporting our local farmers. And I think it is all this one interconnected dance of supporting, you know, farmers locally and as well as, you know, using our backyard spaces. And to your second point about involving neighbors, you know, when we started that, you know, I guess it was 11 years ago now, you know, my neighbors were kind of up in arms when we started, you know, kind of redesigning the landscape into being, you know, a more edible landscape. But I did just sort of start talking to them about what we were doing. And then having them participate. So what I mean by that is I would get, you know, a big harvest of strawberries and I would, you know, make a strawberry cobbler or something and share that with the neighbors. And at first, a lot of people were kind of, you know, like, well, if this didn't come from the grocery store, I'm not sure if it's safe. And so it was, you know, there was acceptance, greater and greater acceptance and interest over time just by involving them. You know, my one neighbor who was sort of very offended by all of the gardens because he really liked his lawn, you know, finally came over in the middle of summer when everything was flowering and realized that it wasn't just rows and rows of crops, that I also involved flowers and it was, you know, there was a design to it that was aesthetically pleasing. And he said, oh, well, you know, if you'd like to use a portion of my backyard to put in another garden, you're welcome to do that. And that was a big moment for me because here is a person who his very hobby is taking care of his lawn. You know, he's a retired guy. But he's offering me a portion of his lawn. And I thought that was a really big deal. And so I did a lot of sort of family style meals whenever I made harvests from that garden. And then by the time we moved from that house, we had been there, I think, 8 years total. And by the time we left, we had met a number of people on our street who also had backyard gardens. And what I realized is everybody felt like they had to hide their gardens. Like gardens were not appropriate to be shared with other people. They were kind of secrets or, you know, not something to be part of the landscape. But by the time we left, there were a number of front yard gardens on our streets. And I can't really claim any sort of responsibility for that. But I wonder if just by showing what's possible, I encouraged others to sort of extend their love of, you know, growing food crops into their front yard in an aesthetically pleasing way.
Oh, I'm sure you did. I think that you know, I think that people do respond when they, you know, they're kind of maybe suspicious of things that are different, worried about change. I think that's a natural response, especially in a neighborhood. You know, most neighbors are, you know, it's just because you live there. You know, you don't want things to change. You don't have control over your environment, but there is a sort of social expression of the environment because you move into a town or a neighborhood and because it is a certain way. So people naturally don't want it to change, even if it looks like a change for the good. So, or a change for the better. So it makes sense that what you've done has had a positive impact. And I think that's really good. I think your book can do that as well. And I really hope that that's the case because we need more. People need to be more connected to the ground. And I really feel strongly that especially children who don't have a clue where food comes from or how it gets to their table can learn a lot from having a garden in their own yard because they get to see how it is miraculous that things grow the way they do. Whenever I see something that I planted come up, I think, wow, that is amazing that can even happen. How does that work? And I think it really is, you know, there's a certain element of that is really important for everyone, for us to be able to appreciate the world that we live in, the physical world, and not just live in our heads the whole time. So,
yeah, I think you're right about that. There's, you know, there's a magic in learning how, you know, food, you know, produces itself. And you know, I didn't grow up gardening, so this has been sort of a love for me to continue to plant new things and learn about them and, you know, experience that. And I just, you made me think of the neighbor down the street when my cherry trees in the front yard were fruiting and I told all of the neighbors that once they started fruiting, I was going to invite them over to help me harvest because, you know, 30 pounds of cherries is a lot for a household of two to manage. Of course, I want to put some up for winter, but I'm also happy to share. But I remember one woman coming over and looking at the cherries on the trees, and she said, "But are they apples?" And, you know, she just had never seen a cherry grow on a tree before. And then her second comment was, "But are they safe? They're not coming from the store, so I'm not sure." And so I do think you're right. I think that there's a magic and an excitement that even as adults we can, you know, get behind when we're sort of participating in this act of growing a few things for our household that we eat on a regular basis.
Well, I really want to thank you for talking to me, Amy. It's been really fun, and I'm glad we had a chance to talk about it. I want to recommend your book to everyone who's listening. I think you've done a really nice job, and I hope that more people will find the book and plant more gardens. The book is called The Suburban Micro Farm, Modern Solutions for Busy People. I think we all could use this. I've been talking to Amy Strauss, the author. It's David Wilk for Writer's Cast. Thank you so much.